You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Joe Brazil is here as well. We're the Insiders. That makes us the Insiders right here on ESPN 1320. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Hanging out with you until noon, and then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. They will take you up to 4 o'clock, and then at 4:30, coverage of day two of the NBA draft begins. The Kings picking 42nd. They have the number 42 pick. I think that's the 12th pick? 12th pick in the second round?
12th pick, yep.
Starts at 31 all the way down, yeah. So the 12th pick in the second round, so make sure to stay locked in. Coming up in a little bit, we will get to players to watch for tonight or some players the Kings might have their eye on tonight. We'll have that for you in a bit. 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia talk line. That's 916-909-1320. All right, James, before we get into some of the other Kings offseason stuff, some of the fallout of last night and what it could mean for the rest of the roster, we're going to get to a couple of phone calls, yeah?
Yep, that let's work? Do that.
Joe, is Will still there?
Yep.
Will's hanging in there?
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Will, really appreciate you for holding. You're on the Elk Grove Kia talk on the Insiders. What's going on?
Hey, not a problem, guys. Thanks for getting to me. Y'all hear me okay?
We got you.
Yeah, we got you. Thanks for calling.
Hell yeah. All right, I got some notes on a potential, and my picks for the 42nd pick is we need a point guard. We don't have a starting point guard or a backup. We need to draft Ryan Nemhard from Gonzaga. He's the best playmaker in the draft. He's a little short. He's undersized, but I have some notes on him too. So great. Senior season, he averaged 10.5 points per game, 9.8 assists per game. He shot 40% from three. He finished 57% at the rim. Senior season, he had a 4-to-1 assist turnover ratio, and he had a fifth most single NCAA season assist ever. So he had an insane playmaking season last season, and we need a point guard. Ryan Nemhard's the guy.
There it is.
Very good. Thanks for the call, Will.
I got to be honest.
Yeah, Andrew Nemhard's brother.
Yep. Yeah. Again, a little bit older prospect. He's 22 years old. The point is that I think really needs to stand out. The Kings don't just need a starting point guard. They also need a backup point guard. Now, you can get away with using a Malik Monk if Malik Monk is still there. There might be a possibility that Keon Ellis or Devin Carter can play that backup point guard position. Just remember last year, the Kings walked into the season with Jordan McLaughlin as like their second slash third point guard. You need those guys. Like every team needs a third point guard, and the fact that the Kings haven't had one is a bit of an issue. And again, you pointed out 10.5 points per game, but 9.8 assists per game and only 2.5 turnovers. That is crazy for an NCAA player to average almost 10 assists per game. Just absolutely spectacular. So yeah, if the Kings stay at 42, if he's available, like why not? And if somehow he doesn't get drafted, which is always a possibility, I also would be on board with a two-way contract for a player like this.
Yeah, man. I don't know if I'd go with him at 42. The consensus mock draft on NBADraft.net has him going 54. Boo. The Pacers, where his older brother Andrew plays. But yeah, man, if you like Ryan Nemhard as a developmental point guard who might be able to play some minutes out the gate, then yeah, sure. If you think he's that dude, like it's the 42nd pick. I know I said I don't know if I would take him at 42. I take that back. That was a silly thing to say. It's the 42nd pick in the NBA draft, man. If you think he's got upside as a starting caliber point guard, when you read about some of the intangibles on him, I sure. Like, why not? You could tell me almost anything that you think should happen at the 42nd pick, and I'll thumbs up it.
Well, and I'll just so for we're on the same page, like Tankathon, their mock draft has Yang Hansen as a 42nd pick going to the Sacramento Kings. he went number 16 overall. And that's why, like, once you get into the second round, like, all bets are off. If you see a player that you like, if there's someone that you like, go ahead and grab that player. Yeah, go ahead. And it doesn't matter. If there's a better player or if there's 6'11" guy that can jump out of the gym, hit threes and block shots, number one, he probably would have gone in the first round. But number two, why not take a gamble on him? Like, if you like somebody, you've met him, you've had some discussions with him, you've had him in for a pre-draft workout, all that stuff, go ahead and I don't think that there is overdrafting somebody in the second round.
No. I'm right there with you, man. And the image of Yang Hansen, by the way, while we're talking about him, the 7'2" center from China.
Yeah.
The image of him walking out of the stands because he wasn't in the green room.
Yeah.
Was incredible stuff. It was so cool. I loved that. I loved that so much. My guy was like, I'm going to be here vibing whether I go in the first round or not.
Well, I mean, that was amazing. He looked good. Everyone's like, well, what just happened? And then you watch the tape, you're like, what in the world?
I got to play. I thought it was wild that the Blazers GM came out and was like, yeah, everyone called it a reach and it was. Like, oh my God, don't say that.
Yeah, but when you have Mike Schmitz as your assistant GM, who is one of the great scouting, guys that we've ever seen, who's been all over the world scouting players for years. He has an eye for talent, and he, like, you watch the film and all of a sudden this big tall kid starts throwing dimes all over the court, and he was at the California Classic last year.
He played 16 minutes against the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, all right, like, go ahead and do whatever. I'm confused why they have him and Klingon and Ayton and Time Lord, and like, they got a lot of dudes that play that center position.
Not super sure what the Blazers are doing there, but yeah, I mean, I guess that's a little bit when we talk about the 42nd pick, it's a little bit where we get with the Kings too. Like, all right, if that's your guy, if you like that player, there's no overdrafting. There's no like, oh wow, that's a reach at 42. At least not for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's NBA draft people who would tell you very differently. But man, I just go get your guy.
Yep.
And don't necessarily worry about what's happening on the internet. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. I know Mark wants to get to his chicken nuggets and pizza rolls. So let's get to Mark on the Elk Grove Kid Talk line. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, Kyle. Hey, James. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Chilling, bro.
So I think the biggest fall in this draft is someone that you guys have talked about on the show before, but Rashear Fleming has fallen to the second round somehow. So the Kings need to figure out how to get the 31 pick. I don't know if that takes the 42 and the two that they got for the Charlotte conversion, because obviously we got the next two drafts of their second round picks. But whatever it can take, it looks like multiple people are reporting that Minnesota doesn't want to keep that pick, and they're looking to trade it. And so whatever it can take, whoever gets 31 is going to take Fleming, I think, because he is an absolute stud. And I think maybe it's a little bit too early because obviously he's a rookie, so it could not pan out. But if he pans out, he could be a fantastic four next to Keegan and next to Sabonis.
All right, very good. Thanks for the call. I'll go back to, if you love a player, if you think Rashear Fleming is gonna start for you, then sure, go up and get him at 31. But I'm not giving up a ton of capital to, especially for a team whose two 2027 second round picks are already tied up. So you're given you're trading 42 this year, and then something else to go up 11 spots and take a guy in the second round. I don't know that I'm ready to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, again, we talked about this early in the show, that when the Kings gave up, you know, when they made the trade to move to 24, they gave up their top 16 protected 2027 San Antonio Spurs pick. And then in addition, they gave up, if that pick doesn't convey, it becomes two 2027 second round picks. So you've tied up those picks. They cannot be traded now. And that's a bit of a problem. I would have no problem giving up one of next year's second round picks and the 42 pick to move up to number 31, because I agree with you about Rashear Fleming. I mean, there's got to be a reason why he fell to the second round. He's almost 21, but 6'9" and a half with a 7'5" and a quarter wingspan. I mean, this, and not only that, he shot 39% from three. So we talked about him earlier. He was one of our prospects to watch. He averaged 14.7 points, 8.5 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, and 1.4 steals. Like, this is a very, very intriguing player. But there's got to be a reason why he fell to the second round, number one. And number two, I just don't know if the Kings are a team that can move up, if they can afford, because they don't have a bunch of draft capital in the future. They don't have another second-round pick until 2032, and they can't trade that right now because they don't get that pick until July 1st. So it makes it a little bit like tight as far as what you have for draft capital, but I do like the prospect, and, you know, like, the comps might be like a Naz Reid, but, you know, again, there's got to be a reason. I know somebody in the chat says he didn't interview well. That's always a possibility, too, that he just, like, for whatever reason, has some issues. But when you're looking at 6'10 with a 7'5 wingspan, who can shoot 39% from three...
The measurables are crazy.
The idea of him is really cool. I don't know the functionality is. We'll see.
I think if the Kings were, because again, that's one of those upside guys, right?
Yeah.
If Nick Clifford is a high floor type of player, Rashear Fleming is a high ceiling type of player, where I think for him, it's just, you've got to let him play and you've got to give him a pretty defined role and put him in an exact spot that you need. Like, maybe he could be this awesome player who plays next to Domantas Sabonis as a stretch four, but For me, if you were going to take that player, you would have done it in the first round.
Yeah.
If you can get up for a couple of seconds or whatever, then yeah, I wouldn't hate it. But I think when you're trying to get inside the minds of the Kings front office, I think if that's the type of player they wanted, where you're talking upside and you're talking ceiling, I think they would have done that in the first round. And I think you'd see a little bit different roster build. But it feels like, based on the Nick Clifford pick, that, man, they're trying to fill the roster with players who can contribute day one, who fit that mold of versatile 3-and-D type of wing, and then obviously the point guard side of it, which is where the Nembhard discussion came from, Andrew Nembhard's brother from Gonzaga. So I like the idea of Rashear Fleming, but I don't know that the Kings are necessarily going to be in the market for a trade up to 31.
Yeah, and I know somebody in the chat, let me see, Oldie, he says, I hate that he doesn't interview well moniker. As somebody who's interviewed a ton of NBA draft prospects, a ton, like the 1 year, I think we interviewed like 98 people. Well, not all of them. We didn't interview all of them. We probably interviewed 30 or 40. But for years I've done this. Like, we're not talking about someone who's uncomfortable in an interview. There are certain things that you look for in an interview that are, like, either red flags or that, you know, again, like, there are certain players who just can't talk. Like, you can tell, like, they're not used to the spotlight. They come from a small school, or they were, like, the third best player on a smaller school and never did talk to the media. And all of a sudden, they're in a scrum with, like, a bunch of cameras pointing around them, and they just freeze up. That's one thing. What we're talking about is guys who really come off the wrong way. And so, like, they're, like, I can tell you a litany of issues that I've heard from different players that go through the draft process, and, you know, weird stuff where you're like, oh, that's not good. But also just keep in mind that the bigger programs, like a guy from Kentucky, he comes out, he's had media training. Like that's just it. They've had media.
I'm sorry. I might have missed something, and if I did, please let me know. When I hear he didn't interview well, I take that as he interviewed with the team. Like, he talked with the team about, like, basketball.
Oh.
That's how I take it. I don't give a damn what a guy does in front of the media. That does not affect my view of that person as a prospect at all. When I hear he didn't interview well, or Rashear Fleming fell out of the first round because of his interviews, like, if that was the case, I take that as when he met with teams are like, ooh.
Well,
like,
no.
This didn't go well.
I get that, but we have the same exact response with them. And again, interviewing in front of the media and interviewing in front of a team isn't really all that different. A lot of these kids have not been in, like, a panel interview before.
Sure.
They just haven't. And again, the big schools, they have not only, like, media training, but they draft prep with the kids. They mm-hmm. sit them down and they have somebody from outside come in and start hitting them with questions and, like, how do you respond to this type of question? Smaller sure. schools might not have that, or some of, you know, like, some schools just don't value it, and their kids get to the league and, you know, sometimes it hurts them in the draft mm-hmm. process. So I, like, again, I've heard all kinds of crazy stuff.
I think tonight when we talk about the second pick, it just, whether it's Nembhard, whether Fleming continues to fall and that's the guy, I'm not going to kill the Kings if they don't trade up for Rashear Fleming, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Just find a player you like. I don't even necessarily, I care about position a little. Like, if you go get a pure two guard who's not a point guard, and they're 6'4", and they don't play a ton of defense, like, all right, that feels redundant. But if you go get a center, if you get a four or a rim running big, or a guy who might, like, Tyrese Proctor, for example, is, I think, probably by the most technical definition a shooting guard, but there's, like, upside as a point guard. Okay. Cool. If you think you can find a project in the second round who can play some of the G League and develop into the player you want, then great. That's kind of more what I'm looking for with the 42nd pick.
Well, that, and hey, let's be honest, the Kings just made a move that pushed them to the 24th pick. There's mm-hmm. a possibility that because they gave up 2 second round picks to move up into the draft, or they have 2 second round picks on hold now for at least the next 2 years, that they could look at the 42 and say, you know what? We might be better off trading for 2028 second round pick today, because mm-hmm. then at least we have something. Like, if we get to midseason and some team says, hey, we like this deal, but we need a sweetener, and the Kings are like, we don't have a sweetener. You go, okay, you know what? We have this 2028 pick, the second round mm-hmm. pick that we acquired for the 42. We'll go ahead and throw that in. If the Kings trade out of the second round today, I would be mm-hmm. totally fine with that, as long as they're not selling the
sure.
pick. As long as they're getting a future second round pick, that yep. would make a ton of sense to me, just because they need to restock some of this. And again, mm-hmm. go back and look what the Knicks did when Scott Perry was there, about how they stockpiled first and second round picks for a couple of years to make sure that they had enough to make trades when they came along. And sure enough, that's why they have Mikal Bridges.
We'll dig deeper into the second round. What player do we think the Kings are going to take? We'll give you a few names here coming up next. Plus, we got to get to the trade rumors swirling around the Kings, because it's starting to involve a name that we haven't talked about a lot this offseason. We'll tell you who it is next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Day two of the NBA draft is today. That is round two. Coverage begins right here on ESPN 1320 at 4:30 p.m. We've been talking about some of the names that Kings might be looking into tonight. Should they trade up? Should they trade out of the second round? They have the number 42 pick. That's the 12th pick in the second round. We'll get to some of the names that they may consider or might be there at 42. We'll give you some players to watch for tonight. But I want to talk about the Kings roster at present, because they drafted Neat Clifford, who I saw some of the immediate reaction last night was, oh my God, another two guard. But I think the expectation is, okay, he might play the two, but he ideally would probably play the three, maybe able to push to the four in some matchups. He plays bigger than his listed size, right? I think that's kind of what the Kings are hoping. But the two guard aspect of this, there's dots that you kind of connect as we go along here. And we've heard Malik Monk's name kind of thrown out in rumors, and it's just kind of out there. And then you've got Sam Amick reporting that the Kings are listening to offers on every player, and things with Sabonis are cooling down, and it doesn't look like he's going to demand a trade or anything. And I keep coming back to Malik Monk. Because when you start to go through and again, when you talk about this is just checking boxes on a contending roster, you start looking at the overlap for the Kings, right? If you're not tearing it down, which it doesn't seem like they are want to do, you start looking at, okay, where's some of the overlap and how do they change that? And I think there's a lot of overlap between what Zach LaVine provides and what Malik Monk provides. And barring a Zach LaVine trade, which I don't think is necessarily on the table, even though Sam Amick also reported that they're not prioritizing an extension for him, which I think is kind of interesting. But when you go, oh, the Raptors have interest in Malik Monk, the Kings need to shed some of their roster overlap. That kind of seems like the logical member of the quote-unquote core that would be getting dealt here.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, Scott Perry is going to want to build his own team. And, you know, that we've been saying this forever. That can get really uncomfortable. It's going to get, like, there are fans that are going to freak out when some of these trades happen, if they actually happen. I mean, we've yet to see one of the big trades happen over the last couple of days, you know, while all these other monstrous trades are happening. We saw a bunch of draft day trades yesterday, but like for picks and stuff, we did not see a bunch of player movement yesterday, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get to this point here where we're in the sweet spot before, after the draft, once you get past tonight, like the second round will happen tonight. I would think that the next couple of days are going to be really interesting for teams because it's sort of the build up to free agency, which starts on Monday. And I would not be surprised at all if you start to see movement. But like in order to get a starting point guard, you're going to have to give up something. And, you know, as of right now, I mean, we know that Zach LaVine is a starting shooting guard. We know that DeMontis Sabonis is starting at center. We know that Keegan Murray is the starting power forward, and we know that DeMar DeRozan is the starting small forward. We have no idea who the starting point guard is. I don't think it's Keon Ellis. And as of right now, they tried the Malik Monk thing, and then at the end of the season, they went back to Monk coming off the bench. And so I'm not sure that they're convinced that that's the right move either. In order to get a starting point guard, you're going to have to figure out a way to acquire that player. You're going to have not only matching salary, but enough talent to go acquire a starting point guard. And we're seeing names brought up. I know Amick brought up Russell Westbrook, Tyus Jones, the Dennis Schroeder thing is weird. And again, I'm not saying that the Kings aren't going to go sign Dennis Schroeder, but I am, like, what I've heard around the league is that it's very possible that Dennis Schroeder's people are putting out the Kings stuff in order to get more money out of Detroit, which is where he finished last season.
Amick also reported that Detroit is trying to get something done with Schroeder.
Yeah. So
it's like that just very much tracks.
Yeah. And it's somewhere around the full mid-level. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get, so they might be leveraging the Kings a little bit, but at the same time, like, hey, the Kings are, they have to find a starting point guard. And even if it's a starting point guard that we keep talking about that just isn't going to move the needle, that doesn't mean that they don't have to at least have one that starts.
Sure.
Somebody has to start at the position. And as of today, like, Malik Monk is your best option.
If they had to play a game today, Malik Monk would start a point guard.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's possible they would start Keon, but I don't know.
And is Devin Carter your backup one right now?
Maybe. I mean, that's the problem. That I mean, realistically, this team has four shooting guards in Malik Monk, Zach LaVine, Keon Ellis, and Devin Carter. And they don't need four shooting guards. They have to figure out the point guard position. And then, or the other option is they have to go a 100% Domantas Sabonis-centric offense. And they've done that in the past, but I'm not sure that that's who they want to be moving forward. Like, again, we saw his assist numbers drop from 8 a game to 6 a game this last year. Part of that's because a bunch of their shooters decided they couldn't shoot the basketball anymore. But also part of it is because you added a guy like DeMar DeRozan who takes away some of that ball handling. You added different players that changed the dynamic of the roster. But that still, it doesn't change the fact that the Kings at least need somebody to bring the ball up every single time. And as of today, I wouldn't like truly put a stamp on any one of the guys that they have on the roster as a quote unquote starting point guard, even a game managing point guard that you can run out there for 30 plus minutes a night. Yeah.
I like Malik Monk a lot.
Yep.
But if you can flip him for more wing depth or a point guard, or flip him in a deal that lands you a point guard, or flip him for assets that help you land a point. Like, I just, when you start going through the roster and you start going through, okay, what's tradable, bendable. I'm on the Malik Monk is the most important Kings player bandwagon and have been for a couple of years now. But I think in reality, when you look at what the Kings roster is and kind of what they're working with and the hand that Scott Perry has picked up, it feels very much like, oh, that's the move. That's the trade. It's not Keegan Murray. It's not Domantas Sabonis. It's not DeMar DeRozan. It's Malik.
Yeah. Hmm. No, it's possible, but at the same time, like, look, I think that when you're building a really high-level team and you have a star six-man like Malik is, which I believe he is a star in his role, but he's miscast if he's a starter. He is really built to come off the bench, give energy, play 26, 27 minutes tonight, hit a bunch of crazy shots, get in the pick-and-roll action, like, score, like, create things for his teammates. Like, I think that's perfect, but that's a luxury to have. It's a luxury to have Bobby Jackson. It's a luxury to have a Lou Williams. It's a luxury to have Jamal Crawford. When you have a starting point guard, it's a luxury. It can't be like the only thing you're just depending on. Hey, we've got to get through the first 8 minutes of the game or the first 6 minutes of the game until we can get Malik Monk in there. That's not a good situation to be in. And I also think that, like, when you're a good team, you can pay a guy $19 million, $20 million a year to be your sixth man. When you're not a good team, when you're a 40-win team and a team that's you know, sort of treading water and hoping that you're going to survive, you've got to get the basics in place first. And then having extra pieces like this that are awesome to have on your team, that's great and all, but you have to have the base before you can have the extras. You know, it's like putting a big-time hot rod engine into a car that has no wheels. And you're like, boy, sure does sound great in the garage, but we ain't got no wheels. Like, somebody has to move this thing along. Somebody has to drive, be the driving force behind this team and be your leader on the court. And until they have that guy, it's going to be really difficult. And even a stopgap at this point is tough.
Hey, here's the thing that surprised me that we haven't talked about. I was really sure that if the Kings traded into the first round, it was going to involve Devin Carter. Were you surprised that their trade up didn't involve Devin Carter?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I don't know that the value's there. And that's the problem. And I know that that's tough, but you're looking at a kid who was the 13th pick in the draft, but had a major shoulder injury and had to go through surgery. I still think that Devin Carter, you know, if Devin Carter wasn't hurt last year, he probably would have been like the 6th or 7th or 8th pick in the draft. He would not have fallen to number 13. So I'm a little surprised that the value isn't there still, especially since he is healthy now. And, you know, he didn't have a great like final end to the rookie season. But, like, let's be fair to the kid. He didn't have a training camp. He didn't have a summer. Sure. He didn't have anything. He actually didn't have the first 40 games of the season to show you what he can do in the last 40. So, like, the rookie wall may have just hit him before he even got, you know, out of the gate. Yeah, I'm a little surprised. But also, like, look, that's a $6 million player. And some of these teams that are sitting in the 20s weren't looking to acquire a $6 million player. Right. They might be looking to acquire future things. And, you know, again, you're dealing with Sam Presti, like, to get the 24th pick. Like, OKC doesn't need another player. They've already, they came into the night with 13 on the roster.
Which, yeah, it wasn't a shock that OKC didn't take him. I was surprised they didn't get up. I was surprised their deal did not land with a team that ended up involving Carter.
Yeah, like the 21 or 22 or one of the Nets picks. Yeah, no, you're right. But also, I think the Kings were in a point where they had a list of like 4 or 5 players that they were hoping would make it to a certain point in the draft. Mm-hmm. And of course, Neek was really high on that list. And the fact that he made it there, but don't forget that there are other players that they also had high on their list, you know. They would have loved to have, you know, drafted a guy like who did we go through yesterday and talk about? That, like, Asa Newell was a guy that, you know, was on their list. Walter Clayton is a guy that's on their list. You know, they had players that they were excited about and hoping, you know, might make it. Even a guy like Nolan Traore. You know, those are players that if they made it to a certain point in the draft, you're like, okay, we're game. We're going to go get that pick. And that's why it happened so quickly, where they were able to, they already had, you know, the outline, the framework of a deal in place with a team like OKC. Because again, OKC did not want to make that pick at all. They already had the 15th pick. Yeah. They already had the 15th pick. They had 13 guaranteed rosters, salary spots already taken on the roster. So that put them at 14. If you're going to draft a kid in the 20s, he's going to get guaranteed money. That would have put you at 15. You have no roster flexibility to do anything. And then you go into next year and it's the same exact thing. You know, this team, they've always had all of this, all of these assets. But at a certain point, you fill up your roster. And then, you know, we've seen them waive players who, or trade players for nothing, who are really good or who at least had talent. But they couldn't fit him on the roster. You know, Trey Mann, there's a couple of good dudes, Robinson Earl, that they just had to, like, get rid of because they don't have enough roster spots. And it's a blessing and a curse, but that's why that 24th pick was available, because they're already a 14-man roster, and you at least want the ability to go out and prioritize a position in need with a potential veteran, especially with they have cap space as well.
All right, let's talk day two prospects. That's James Hamm, I'm Kyle Madsen, and Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. So I guess let's start here. Would you rather the Kings pick at number 42 and take one of the several players that we'll throw out here in a few minutes? Or would it be better for them long-term? Because we've talked about, man, the player you're getting at 42 might just be like a G League guy this year. He's not really going to might develop, he might not. But is there more value, instead of taking a swing at 42, trying to trade out of that spot and maybe getting a future second round pick to kind of replenish some of the assets that are being tied up in the trade up to number 24?
It's a really difficult question, you know, because I think what Scott wants to do here is put his stamp on, you know, every aspect of team building. So you've got your draft, you've got your free agency and your trades. He wants to put a stamp on the draft. He wants to bring in guys that make sense to him. But I'll say this, the Kings also, they did something interesting and, you know, they retained some of their front office personnel. You know, Alvin Gentry, Phil Jabbour, Paul Johnson, they're all still here. Those guys are the same guys that have searched the last couple of years for players like Keon Ellis, players like Isaiah Crawford, Isaac Jones, right?
Mm-hmm.
I personally would look at this pick right here and say, how do I go get another asset for the future? I would look at getting a 28, maybe a 29 second round pick, you know, even a 30 or 31. The Kings don't have any of those. They don't have a 28, 29, 30, or 31 second round pick. If you can replenish that and go get, even if a team says, hey, we've got a couple of weird protected second round picks, would you take two? And like, okay, like go ahead and move out of this spot, because I do think that you have something with Isaiah Crawford. I do think you have something with Isaac Jones. And again, if you were to like throw out the entire front office and start fresh, then that's one thing. Every single player is up for grabs and, you know, you're going to look at changing everything. But when you already have two young players that either played well at the G League or played well in limited action at the NBA level, like why not see what you have? Because there's a possibility that they're going to be so much further along after 1 year of NBA action than any mm-hmm. player you're going to get at 42. And the asset that you could go get at with that 42nd pick could yield you not another second round player down the road, but a player like a Jake LaRavia who, you know, a team is looking to dump at the deadline because they're trying to get underneath the luxury tax.
Right.
So now you've got a second round pick to go trade for an actual rotational player, where today the Kings have two 2026 second round picks, but they won't have another one until 2032. So that's kind of how I would handle it. Unless, again, you can move to 31 and go get a potential, you know, Rashear Fleming type player that, you know, I like. And, you know, we talked about him before, but like mm-hmm. that's how I would handle it.
Yeah, I think I for the most part agree, just because it's hard to, we talked about like Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington, right? Dallas added them ahead of the deadline a couple years ago, and they were key components of their run to the NBA Finals. And when you started looking at the Kings' available assets, they just didn't have anything to play in those pools.
Mm-hmm.
Like they couldn't really be competitive for a PJ Washington type player. And PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford are good NBA players, but they're not, oh, you need a stack of first round picks to make sure that you can go get them, right? This isn't Jaylen Brown or apparently Desmond Bane, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that having those assets down the road is more valuable than a player who more likely than not is not going to be an impactful NBA player.
Yeah.
Just based on the history of the second round pick. Now, I also don't think it's the end of the world if they wind up staying at 42.
I don't either.
And the reason I say that is the amount of players who could be available for them who just do something a little bit different, I think is a potentially useful thing if they can find a player with some upside who maybe needs a year or two to develop but could eventually become a piece of the rotation down the road. I don't hate that.
Yeah, I don't hate it either, especially if Scott sees somebody who he has confidence in that's his type of player and his type of mm-hmm. culture building, you know, what the Kings are trying to do here. So interesting stuff though.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what happens here at number 42. We'll have some names for you. We're going to throw out some names, some guys we talked about, some guys we haven't. Jesse Tapia is going to be in for the handoff. And then more Jonathan Kuminga connection to the Kings. We got to talk about this because there's a lot of smoke around that. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Kenny Caraway here for the handoff. Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. We're hanging out with you until noon. And D'Lo and KC will take over. They'll take you up to 4 o'clock. Coverage of day two of the NBA draft begins at 4:30. Kenny, I will ask you the question that we were talking about at the end of the last segment.
Okay.
Would you rather see the Kings pick at 42 tonight or trade out of the second round if it means recouping some of the assets that are tied up in their trade up to number 24?
Make a pick. I think that's where I'm at. I heard you guys talking about it earlier, and you're 100% correct. You know, just, hey, you want to, those second round picks are valuable, not necessarily for the players that you might get, but being able to do different deals later on, you know what I mean? But obviously, I'm like everybody else. Well, not everybody else, but a lot of other people. Tyrese Proctor is there at 42. Let's go try and get that guard right there. You know, I think the other two guys that I really like, I'm really point guard hunting in this second round. But yeah, obviously, I like Mark Sears. You know, looks like a mini version of Jalen Brunson. I like Caleb Love.
A mini version of Jalen Brunson?
They shrunk.
Mini version in.
Honey, I shrunk to Jalen Brunson?
Mini version in game style. Not physically. Not physically. There you go. Great value brand, Jalen Brunson.
Jalen Brunson.
But I really like his game out of Alabama. I like Caleb Love out of Arizona. He showed me a lot in this senior season that he played down there at Arizona. So I'm looking at some of these players. But when you ask that question, you mean maybe trade the 42 or move back or something like that and gain a second rounder somewhere or something like that, huh? If they could move down and gain a second rounder, I think that'd be the best of both worlds.
I like some of the players that you're talking about. I would be okay if they surfed the undrafted free agent market again.
See, Sears, I think Proctor's going to get drafted. Sears and Caleb Love, I'm not sure you need to draft them. I think they might go undrafted.
Yeah.
But also if you like a player, whether you think they're going to get drafted or not, like the Blazers said this yesterday when they took Young Hansen. Mm-hmm. Like, man, just they like that player. So instead of trying to wait around and figure out how to get him later, just go get him now.
Right. Right.
So if you really believe in it, now if it's a player that you're like, yeah, if we end up with him, we like him as a project, then okay, I'm not worried about it. But here's the interesting thing. I was going through and I was kind of picking out some names that are still available. And here's what I think is interesting. So you have Sion James from Duke, a player we've talked a little bit about, kind of in the same mold as Neat Clifford.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of idea as a player, that guard forward kind of hybrid. Then there's Kobe Brea. That's mine and Joe Brazil's guy.
Yep.
Just shoots the hell out of it. But doesn't, you know, plays some defense, but not he is a shooter.
Right.
Tyrese Proctor, Kenny, who you just brought up. I think the Tyrese Proctor thing is really interesting because I don't know how much he's contributing in year one, but can you get him in with a veteran point guard and kind of develop him more? Because it feels like he's teetering on the edge of, is he going to be a point guard or a shooting guard?
Mm.
And is he going to, you know, be that true one, or is he strictly going to be a two? I think he's kind of teetering on the edge of that. And can you bring him in with a Dennis Schroeder, with a Tyus Jones, and by the end of the season going into next year, you feel good about Tyrese Proctor as a point guard prospect?
Right. I like, yeah.
That'd be the question there for me.
Right. Yeah, I don't like hate any of these ideas. Like, I think the Kings are open to everything. I just think that, like, if you draft let's say you draft Kobe Brea, the chances of you being able to trade Kobe Brea down the road for a Jonas Valanciunas or Jake LaRavia. It's just not there. Mm-hmm. But the opportunity, if you were to go get a second round pick, that second round pick, even though it shouldn't have the value that it does, you can use that to go get a more seasoned veteran player when you need one. And as of right now, just like asset collection, the Kings don't have a ton of assets outside of first round picks. And you don't always want to just throw up a first round pick for somebody unless they're of a certain quality of player. And so that's where I'm at. But again, if they find somebody that they think is one of their types of players, I'm okay with it.
One of the things, and Kyle, you mentioned this earlier in the show, I think right at the top of the show, you're looking at this Kings roster right now, and a move is going to be made. And that may be a situation where you look at, in whatever deal we do, we can sneak one or two second-round picks out of that deal or
sure.
out of two different deals or something like that. Maybe that's how you gain some of those assets.
Let me turn it on its head. What if you need one of those second-round picks to make the deal that you're talking about?
Then you handle that tonight. Yeah, you handle that tonight. Yeah.
What if someone says, hey, we like that deal, but we need a little bit more, and you're like, well, I don't want to throw in it first.
And I would tell them, let me flip that back on its head. I'm giving you three NBA players. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think that like it's about flexibility and asset flexibility and asset management. And I don't think the Kings have always been good at asset management. Actually, the last year and a half of the Monty and Wes era was just some of the worst asset management when it came to things like second round picks. Just to squander three of them for no reason. That to me was one of those things that just stood out like, what are we doing here? Even the final one, just the Jalen McDaniels thing.
Right.
You could have had a guy like Jake LaRavia way earlier, or a guy like Jonas Valanciunas way earlier, like weeks that could have impacted your team differently if you wouldn't have just given away a second round pick to dump a $4 million salary. Mm. Like you could have stretch provisioned that thing, stretch provisioned McDaniels and cut his salary to, you know, $1.5 million, $1.5 million, $1.5 million over 3 years, which is nothing by NBA standards, and saved yourself $3 million and kept your second round pick. It's one of those moves that I will never understand that they did, but that's why we're at where you're looking at like, all right, what are you going to do? Again, they don't have a 28, 29, 30, or 31 second round pick. Mm-hmm. That's tough. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need those things.
Real quick, let me ask James. Kyle, you may know this too, but one of the sneaky moves, and I think it is, that's why I want to confirm with you, one of the sneaky benefits of being able to trade back into the first round last night and make the pick is that allows the Kings to trade a 2026 first rounder now, right?
As of July 1st, they can trade their 2026.
But if they hadn't drafted last night, they wouldn't be able to do that today, correct?
Okay,
or
today,
even July
but July
1st.
July 1st, it resets. So anything that you trade today wouldn't matter for next year. The fact that they gave away that their pick went to Atlanta this year, that resets on July 1st, and they could trade their 2026. Now, if we go back to February, the trade deadline, and they know, it doesn't matter if they know that they're going to give away their pick or not, they can't trade their 26 until then. They couldn't trade their 27 either.
Right.
So it became like, once we get past the draft, once a pick is made, it now resets and the Stepien rule doesn't apply.
Gotcha.
It doesn't carry over to the next year.
So now they can trade 28. Potentially,
well, as of right now,
it opens up one of the years, right? By drafting yesterday,
yeah,
it opens up one of those years, 27, 28, something like that.
Well, as of today, I mean, today they can now trade their 2026, but again, they could trade their 2026 come July 1st.
Gotcha. Okay, I wasn't sure.
If you had to make a move, and it does matter though, because if you have to make a move today for a player, because and the money works today for this. Trade that we're dreaming up, right? But one of the players in the trade either is a free agent coming up or their contract goes way up and all of a sudden the money doesn't work. So you can make a trade today that may not be, you might not be able to make in 5 days.
Gotcha.
Because there are players out there that their contracts jump up so much that there's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. Like the numbers won't work anymore.
Gotcha.
It's complicated. Sorry.
Oh, that was perfect.
Can we talk about this Jonathan Kuminga stuff from Sam Amick real quick?
Yeah.
Redacted Amick.
Sorry. Someone at The Athletic wrote about the Kings. Someone at the New York Times. Anthony Slater's coworker.
Former coworker.
Former.
Oh, is that official?
Well, I don't know.
He announced it. It was announced like 2 weeks ago or something like that.
Oh,
okay. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, here we go. All right. So a person in The Athletic, Am Samick, said, to that end, league sources say the Kings are among the teams that have interest in Golden State's Jonathan Kuminga and will be monitoring his market when his restricted free agency begins. And while it appears unlikely that Kuminga will ultimately come their way, it speaks to the vision and the range of possibilities here that they're even focusing on players of that ilk. I would be stunned if Jonathan Kuminga winds up in Sacramento.
Me too.
I think Sam's right in that, cool, like they're interested in that type of player. Kuminga has size, athleticism, is elite, still just 23 years old, which is insane considering how much experience he has in the NBA. But again, that's a sign and trade. That's you're paying him a ton of money and giving up assets to go get him. Mm-hmm. And I just don't, they don't seem to be moving in a way that indicates they are, wanting to go pay and trade a bunch of stuff to get Jonathan Kuminga.
I agree.
I think it's also interesting that the Heat and Kings are in lockstep on like three or four different types of players. And that makes it really difficult to actually make trades with each other. Because if you're trying, again, if they're looking at the same exact draft picks, the same guys in the draft, they're all sort of like honing in on. And then they're also looking at the same free agents that they might chase. It makes it really difficult because you're in competition now. Yeah. And so I think it's kind of like turned everything upside down a little bit.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if that happened. He actually makes a little bit more sense for Miami to go after than maybe the Kings with a sign and trade.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Kenny Caraway, what you guys got coming up on D'Lo and KC?
Man, we got a lot, man. We've got Jake Gayton pulling up. We got Jake Fisher pulling up, who got me last night. He got me. Drake Uyuu and Matt George is pulling up as well, man. So we're going to talk all Kings all day.
Should be a ton of fun with D'Lo and KC right here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader. We're the insiders. James and I back with you tomorrow. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1320. Sacramento Sports Leader. Until then, drink water, be nice people. See you!
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.